Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudy. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show once again, and as always, I am your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. With me in the studio today is Baby Ange, an LA-based writer and podcaster who asks for zodiac signs in lieu of names. Her podcast is called Femme Too Deep. Ange, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on this show. I'm a fan, by the way.
Well, thank you. I mean, I already am too, after just a couple of minutes. I got to tell you, listeners, that just before we started recording, I was asked for my sign, and I have just learned four new things about it, all of which I have now forgotten. But I have a moon, something about me is rising, and I am not always what I appear to be. And I'm a surprise to you. So that's four things right there I've just learned about myself.
No, the zodiac is full of stuff. That's not even, we didn't even scratch the surface. We just kind of licked it a little bit. We kind of smelled it. And that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're nuzzling it right now.
That's all we're doing. Yep.
And I assume in your podcast, Femme Too Deep, you get real deep into things. Is that the sort of like genesis of the name? Is like, you're like, let's get underneath
the
surface?
Yeah, we're going deep. Yeah. I try to get all into that like spiritual gook and like mess of like trauma that we all are. And then how can we sort through it and like delve in there without losing ourselves and then coming up to the surface and like sharing our beauty and our amazingness with all of that trauma, not despite it, and then give to the world and hopefully do great things and shift courses, because things aren't looking so good. It's kind of crazy.
Things are not looking so
They're
good.
They're not.
And I love the idea of not trying to completely like slough off all trauma or put it behind us in the past, but like finding a way to like healthily incorporate it into a part of who you are.
Yeah, it's so integral.
Man, well, hopefully we will be able to achieve that end today. I've realized that a lot of the questions that I've saved for us today are very like, they're very physical, they're very relational. It has a lot to do with people like kind of getting real like deep one-on-one face-to-face experiences, which are often not my area of greatest expertise. I feel like I'm best at like, that stranger was rude to you. Here's something snappy to say to them next time. Man, we are starting off with a letter that I just need to like warn you. I'm going to have a hard time being charitable towards this person. And I want to be gentle in my reproach of where they're coming from, but it is going to be a real struggle for me not to just yell at them. And I want to be honest so that we begin in a place of mutual disclosure.
I haven't read it, so I think I'll be reading it along with you.
I'm excited. I'm excited for you to like experience it firsthand. And I also mostly left the language as it was. There are a few things that I took out in part because I just felt like it was really unnecessary to retain some of the language that they used. But I thought it was kind of helpful because I felt like it accurately summed up their mindset. So that's kind of why I've left some of the little asides they chose to make, which I look forward to taking apart. So the subject of this one is just sex negativity. And let me tell you, friends, that was not the original subject. Dear Prudence, I met a man and we slowly got to know one another over the last year. He's a nice guy with one teeny tiny problem. We finally decided to get physical and, well, that's where the teeny tiny part comes in. I found myself in a real life, is it in yet joke, and I'm incredibly turned off by it. I hate feeling disgusted by something that is beyond his control, but I can't help it. The thought of him touching me again makes my skin crawl. I told him I don't want to have sex anymore and just want to be friends. And now I find myself annoyed that he's still texting me comments that make me think he still thinks there's a chance. I've already told him I'm not interested anymore and withdrew any and all flirting, What else can I do or say to get it through to him short of ghosting or screaming, it's because you have a little dick? Also, am I a huge dick for reacting this way to his minuscule manhood? Man, that felt like an old Sex and the City monologue. Like, just the number of puns and little jokes about, like, euphemisms for somebody's genitals.
Oh, yeah.
And not in a good way. Like, there's sometimes ways to, like, throw back to the old Sex and the City vibe that can be fun and campy, and this was not one of them. To answer your last question first, letter writer, yeah, man, you're being just a shit.
I agree. I fully agree. I think that this is just, it's ridiculous. And I fully see her, like, at her laptop, just like Carrie, and just kind of like going on, like, kind of, she's cool. Like, excuse me, I don't want to assume that this is a woman, actually. Although it sounds like there's penetration. So, you know, whatever.
Which could still happen with a guy. But I do feel like this is the kind of letter where if the letter writer were also a guy, he probably would have provided us with that information. So I think your instinct that this is probably a woman writing in is probably right. And probably a cis woman.
Yeah. And she definitely feels like this is just the worst kind of, like, you know, affront to her. And it's like, you totally cut off any opportunity to, like, explore here, and you are being ridiculous. I would say, given her attitude, I would say ghosting might be the preferred route to take, because I don't know if she could handle, like, a good conversation about this subject. She may just do more damage than ghosting.
Right. Although it's hard because, like, they have known each other over the last year. Like, this isn't some guy she went on two dates with. Like, they had some sort of pre-existing friendship, you know, of more than just a couple of months duration. And so I think, I mean, obviously, first and foremost, I don't want in any way to imply that, like, letter writer, I do think that you're being a real jerk about this, and there's a lot I want you to re-examine. Don't, by no means should you take that as a sign that we are saying, like, to be a really good person, you should go sleep with him. I don't think you should sleep with him. You don't want to. That's a great reason not to sleep with somebody. I don't think you need to, like, teach yourself to become more accepting of other people's bodies by sleeping with this particular man. I want to make that really clear. It is absolutely fine to decide you don't want to sleep with somebody. And that is not the issue. The issue is not, nope, you got to go be a good person and have sex with this guy. I think it is for the best for the both of you that you not sleep together.
Yes.
So I just want to make that really clear.
Yeah.
But, I just, like, there's such a glee in your letter about all, like, the number of jokes you make in almost every line and just constantly referring to the size of his genitals as if to say, like, isn't this bananas? Can you imagine? My skin is crawling. I'm disgusted. And there's that sort of, like, vague attempt to say, like, yeah, I guess I feel bad about this, but I can't help it. As if there's no way we can ever, like, re-examine where disgust comes from. As if disgust is manufactured in a vacuum and comes from nowhere and is never based on any sort of, like, conditioning that we could re-examine or take another look at.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, in case there are any of your listeners who have penises and may be concerned about their size, I have technically been with somebody who's considered very on the small kind of side. And it was still great. Your sex is still great. It's awesome. I loved it. I enjoyed myself. So I just feel, like, really bad for anybody reading this or, you know, hearing this, feeling like, damn, you know, that people could be talking about me like this. And I am a proponent of all sizes because I have had extremely small and also sizable, and both were very enjoyable. So I just want to say that.
Yeah. And the sort of baseline is not that, like, anybody who has any kind of, like, you know, preferences or tendencies or habits when it comes to the ways that they like to have sex is a bad person. But this sort of, like, cruelty, shock, and horror and disgust at just another person's body that is well within the range of, like, just human diversity. It's just not that's you have indulged this way too much. You have indulged this tendency within yourself, and it's not good. And it's people's genitals are not a problem. I just feel, like, pretty strongly about, like, I think one thing that is a better way to approach sex and sexuality is if you are seeing somebody that you like and you're attracted to, and you run into something that brings up a surprising thought or feeling or response in you, that's okay. You don't have to beat yourself up for having a response, but letting it drive your behavior like this, I think it becomes painful. It's clearly painful for you. I'm sure it's painful and bewildering for him. But like, if you encounter the genitals of somebody that you're interested in and you think of it as a problem rather than an opportunity, you're going to put yourself in the way of like frustration, misunderstandings, and frankly, cruelty. There's a lot of cruelty here. And I don't want you to be cruel. So in terms of what you can do next, the fact that he does not seem to be getting the hint, even though you have said, I don't want to have sex anymore, that's totally different, right? Like he should not be doing that. So what you need to say next is, hey, I don't want to go out again. I don't want to sleep together again. If you can be friendly with me and not keep bringing this up or making hints, that's great. And if not, it's better for us not to communicate. That's it. You only need to address the behavior that he's been demonstrating towards you. Do not let yourself get to a point where you're so irritated that you say something cruel about his genitals. That's not good for either one of you. Say that. And if he can't do it, great. Then you guys aren't going to be friends anymore. And if he can, then, you know, go back to the friendship that you had before the two of you slept together. But in terms of just in general, how do you want to think about other people when they do something vulnerable, like show you their body? And how do you want to treat non-normative genitals or people with non-normative genitals? I think I would just really like spend some time non-judgmentally asking yourself, why do I believe that I can't help my disgust at this person's body? Why was my response to this not, what are other options available than just not talking about it and going for standard penis and vagina penetration? Why did I do those things? You know, why does he make my skin crawl over something that I claim not to believe is a personal failing? Where's that coming from? What are my assumptions about what men are supposed to be? What are my assumptions about what women are supposed to be? And how could I react to those feelings differently in the future? It's not necessarily having a surprised response that's the problem. It's what you do with those feelings. And so far, kind of all you've done with those feelings is just allow them to propel you to have a knee-jerk reaction. And the knee-jerk reaction is not one that seems to be making you happy. It certainly doesn't seem to be helpful. I really don't encourage you to either ghost someone you've known for a year or scream about the size of his genitals to him. I would hope you would not want someone to do that to you. I would not want someone to scream at me about my genitals. I don't think you do either. Like, I don't think anybody does.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, just blanket ruling. Don't scream about anybody's genitals.
No.
Unless it is a consensual situation and they have asked you to do so, and that's something that they really enjoy, in which case, you know, go in peace to love and serve the Lord.
Yes.
Is there anything else? Sorry, I know I kind of, you know, had a lot to say on that topic, but is there anything else that, like, you want to throw out there that's maybe going to be helpful to the letter writer, any sort of words of encouragement when it comes to thinking of other things that she could do differently?
Yeah, I really love what you said. And I also encourage her to explore her reaction, not, you know, to reevaluate anything anymore other than her reaction and what are these ideas and where do they come from and how are they informing my perception of both myself and other people and just sex in general, because it's definitely, you know, it's all some deep, like, kind of, you know, ideologies that we all are struggling with. And there's so much pleasure out there to be had that to limit yourself based on bodies and types and all of these things, I just feel like she will come to just some more awakenings and it will make things more interesting if she just connects with herself in those ways of just questioning, looking, seeing, and exploring.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of great ways to have sex out there. I encourage you to consider a couple of additional options in addition to the one that seems pretty crucial to you. I know that was a lot. I do feel very strongly, letter writer, that was a bad response. And I want to encourage you to do and be better. But I also, you know, I want to just reiterate, it is absolutely okay to set limits. It is absolutely okay for you to say, hey, I've already made it clear I don't want to keep dating. You need to knock it off. That is something you are allowed to do. You have every right to do that. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that like the best way to respond to these feelings is to force yourself to sleep with somebody you are not interested in order to feel like a good person again. That's not the goal. That's not productive. That's not necessary. But yeah, just check out some of those inner responses and say, that's really interesting that this is coming up. Let's explore.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ooh, now let's get mad at a man. I wanted to start out our letters
yes.
with just getting mad at people from all sides of all kinds of different situations. Would you be so good as to read this one?
Yes. Dear Prudence, I am having an issue with my wife. I know she reads your column sometimes, so I thought I would ask for your advice. Several months ago, I noticed my daughter had a bandage on her arm. She told me she had gone for a checkup and our family physician had given her a vaccine. Curious, as I did not think she was due for any vaccines, I asked my wife about it and she told me it was Gardasil. I was furious. I told my wife I did not agree with vaccinations for diseases of human weakness and did not want to encourage risky behavior in our daughter. After a lengthy fight, she eventually apologized and said that it was only the first of two doses and not to worry. We have not talked about it since. However, I just received a notice from our insurer about a doctor visit for my daughter, and the date of the visit would have been in the same time frame as when the second dose should be administered, according to what I read on the internet. I want to contact our family physician and confirm my suspicions, but I'm afraid of what it will do to my marriage if I can't trust my wife and daughter to respect my authority. How should I approach this?
I'm kind of surprised this person wrote to me.
Does he listen to your show is the question.
Yeah, I mean, apparently the key is my wife reads your column sometimes because I feel like maybe this guy hasn't. Because if your goal is how can I help you make your wife and daughter respect your authority as like king dad husband, I decline to offer my assistance there, my dude.
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought what he was going to say was, I feel bad going to my family physician rather than discussing this first with my wife out of just trusting and open communication. And then he hit us with the respect to my authority. And I was like, oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, and to be clear, for any listeners who may not have like the immediate brand name on them on their minds, Gardasil is the HPV vaccine.
Yes.
And HPV is sexually transmitted. So, you know, that's what he means when he says a disease of human weakness. You know, how everyone only ever succumbs to sex. No one decides to have it for a good reason. It's always just, oh, I fainted and now sex is here.
Do we know how old the daughter is? I assume they give it at a certain age, roughly around, I want to say teen, like early teen, but I don't know if they do preteens.
My understanding is that, and I'm looking right now at the CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, mm-hmm. And they do recommend it at around the age of 11 or 12, although it can be started as young as 9. And they do actually recommend that people all the way up to the age of like mid-20s, if they didn't get vaccinated when they were young, to get it anyways. So wide possible range of ages. My guess is the daughter in question is a minor.
Okay.
Which is why the letter writer said, you know, I'm thinking about calling the doctor, because if their daughter was over 18, the doctor would be like, hey, man, HIP is a thing.
Right.
And frankly, I do not know to what extent HIPAA protects minors and if this would be something that a doctor would disclose over the phone to a parent. I genuinely do not know. But that's kind of besides the point.
Right.
How are we? I feel like you and I are probably on the same page here, right? Which is that this child should get the HPV vaccine. and we need to help this guy make his peace with it. How are we going to do that?
I think he needs to make his peace with the fact that his child is preteen, and the next step is, yes, this person is becoming and going to be encountering these sort of things. Sex is going to be a very real thing for this child, for this person. And yeah, it's kind of sad that it's come to this where he's on one side and his daughter and his wife are on the other side. And he sees this as a divide, and they just need to come onto his side and see the light, when this is a family discussion and not, you know, here's the line, you stepped over it, wife, daughter, she should not have stepped over this. You guys need to get on my side again.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a little inarticulate, just in the sense of like, I'm not sure which argument I feel comfortable deploying, right? Because there's some things that I don't want to concede. I would say, first and foremost, as a parent, if you have particular ideas about what kind of sex is the best sex to have, that's fine. And you have every right to feel that way. And if you would like to carefully impress upon your child what those values of yours are and encourage them to share them, you can do that too. And as long as your child is living in your home, if you want to set up specific rules about behavior, you can also do that. I think where your authority as a parent stops is to say, if my child does not share these beliefs, then I want them to recreate language about like dirtiness when it comes to stuff like sexually transmitted disease. But then I want her to get cervical cancer. Do you know what I mean, man? Like,
yeah.
When you say that out loud, it sounds bad. And that is the limit of your authority. Like, I don't think you should say, one really great way to drive my point home is to say, hey, if you ever change your mind, I hope you get cervical cancer. I don't think that that's a good way to parent. I don't think that's a loving way to parent. I don't think that's, frankly, an effective way to entice young people to buy into your abstinence. I assume it's abstinence, parade or whatever, right? Like,
yeah, no, that's what he's seeing as the solution. And anything else is weakness. That's like, she's just going on to the dark side. And essentially, like, whatever happens while she's over there, good luck. Like, what?
I'll throw this out, too. I'm not sure that this is likely to convince this person, but there is an article available from the Canadian Medical Association Journal that studied two groups of eighth grade girls who one group did receive the vaccine and one didn't. It was a cohort of over 250,000 girls. They were followed for an average of 4.5 years. There was no statistically significant increase in any indicators of sexual behavior related to having gotten the vaccine. So it does not, in fact, encourage risky behavior. That's something that's been studied. I would encourage you to look up more studies and to reassure yourself. I hate to throw this out there because I feel like there are excellent reasons to get it regardless. But even if it were very, very important to you that your daughter obey your every belief about sexuality, it is possible that your daughter could someday be assaulted against her will, and that this would potentially protect her from one potentially awful, after the fact, additionally traumatizing effect of that. And I don't love saying that because it kind of, I think, like, gives a certain credence to the initial argument of like, well, if it wasn't good enough for that reason, it has to be good enough for this reason. But that does happen, and your daughter should be protected just because you don't know what the future holds. Does that make sense? I feel kind of weird having just said that.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And I also think that, you know, reality is something that this parent is clearly kind of a little removed from, because he does think that he just kind of sees himself as kind of wielding this power and this authority. And he's really not kind of seeing the truth of the matter being that your child is going to go out into the world and they're going to make decisions. They're going to also, like you said, have experiences that may not be fully their part of their foreseen, you know, sequence of events. And risky behavior is really, you're kind of welcoming it when you don't talk to them, and when you don't talk, rather than just, you know, kind of going above and beyond her head, talking to the doctor, getting, you know, reprimanding mom, reprimanding daughter. I assume that would probably happen, like, this, you know, you guys are, this is not okay, and this was unacceptable, et cetera, et cetera. And then it's just a lot of, like, kind of backhanded him kind of moving along, checking, you know, insurance claims, et cetera, instead of communicating, because risky behavior is definitely going to happen if your daughter can't talk to you, and maybe even your wife, if you do manage to, like, bring wife over to your side, then it could totally break down, and daughter's not going to have anybody to talk about these things with. And that is going to lead to risky behavior way more than you guys openly talking and addressing reality and the fact that this is at your front door.
Yeah, and just, like, the idea that your wife undermined you and that your wife and your daughter need to respect your authority. I don't agree that your authority extends over your daughter's body. Mm. Sorry, man. My initial, I almost answered this in the live chat, and the only sentence I could write was, your authority sucks and it's stupid, which is not an especially, like, well thought out or reasoned argument. So I decided to save it for when I could talk my way through some of this. But yeah, man, like, this is not about your authority. This is about the fact that ultimately, as your daughter continues to grow and become an adult, which is the goal of having children, she will get to make decisions about her own body, not you. And you don't actually get to make them for her. And I understand that, like, right now, as her parent, as she is underage, of course you can say things like, you have to go to bed on time, or, you know, you're 12, I don't want you to have sex. But this sort of I want to not give you the sort of adequate vaccination you need in case, as an adult, you make different choices from the ones that I would make for you. You're overstepping your authority there, my man. Like, this is your daughter's life. She's going to become an adult, and she's going to get to make decisions that you may or may not agree with. And I really don't think that it is your purview as a parent to say, I will prevent her from getting any kind of helpful preventative medical care just in case she someday decides to disagree with me. There is no evidence that this vaccine encourages risky behavior. She could marry a heterosexual man at 25 years old who had previously slept with somebody else but has since repented and is now, you know, committed to being faithful to one wife, and he could give her HPV. Like, there are just a lot of circumstances in which she could get this without even violating your very specific ideas about what constitutes weakness and what constitutes risky sexual behavior. So if nothing else convinces you, I would like you to bear in mind that there are ways that your daughter could still get HPV without breaking the rules that seem to be so important to you. But ultimately, I think the real issue here is that you believe yourself to authority that I don't think you have. So don't call the doctor. Talk about this with your wife. If you're troubled or upset, share that calmly with her. Say, I want to understand where you're coming from, and I know so far all I've done is act like you are my child who has disobeyed me, and that's not how I want to relate to you. Walk me through what you've been thinking and experiencing. Help me out here, because I do want to understand, because I hope that you do want to understand. I hope you don't want to simply discipline your wife and daughter as if they are two, you know, out of order actors in your little play.
Oh, authority.
Yeah, I'm not into it. I'm not into it.
No.
Okay, but on the plus side, this next letter is super cute, and it's also about parenting, and I find it deeply, deeply charming.
The title's enticing.
Right? Like, it's, ugh.
Aw. Dear Prudence, 3 years ago, my sister, who struggled with depression her entire life, became pregnant after a one-night stand. She didn't tell the father or anyone about her pregnancy, and shortly after the baby was born, she passed away from suicide. I was able to gain custody of the baby and got in touch with his biological father, who immediately agreed to co-parent his son with me. Since then, we have lived in adjacent apartments, taking care of our adorable, endlessly chatty, and insanely energetic child together. For the first year or so, I think I was too exhausted, overwhelmed, and grief-stricken to notice what a great team we made. I have gradually come to realize that not only do I like him as a friend and respect him as a father, but I am falling in love with him. A week ago, when we were drinking wine and hanging out after our son fell asleep, he confessed he has feelings for me, too. I'm walking on sunshine, Prudy. I want so badly to pursue a relationship with him, and I think he feels the same way. But at the same time, I'm scared to death of it ending badly and ruining the co-parenting relationship we have and the stability our son gets from having his parents be so close. How can we have this relationship responsibly? Is it even possible? Sincerely, falling for my co-parent. Aw.
This is just like extremely, extremely precious, right?
Yes.
Like, I would watch this movie.
Yes.
Except for the part about the sister dying would be very sad.
I know.
Oh. I don't want to be like, oh, so cute, when it's actually born of like a serious tragedy. But this is hard won. Like, this is really lovely that you guys have found this in such a like challenging situation.
Yes. And obviously it's already starting out well if the other parent is coming forward and sharing their feelings, because mm-hmm. communication throughout co-parenting, I'm pretty sure this person knows, is key. And so that's always going to be the best and firmest ground you can stand on when you are communicating honestly, and of course, hopefully as clearly as possible.
Yeah. So, you know, the main concern, right, because the letter writer is mostly just thrilled, like this kind of works beautifully in everybody's favor. But the fear is, what if it ends badly and we don't have this good parenting relationship any longer? And I understand that fear. I think that's a very legitimate fear. But I would say to that, I think you're already running that risk now, right? Like, you're already openly in love with one another. So that's already out there. It's not like not going for it would make you both feel relaxed, comfortable, easy, casual. Given that you have both confessed your feelings for one another, you're both aware of it. There's already that emotional risk that's already being run. I don't think that should be a reason not to do it.
Definitely not. And if clearly, taking the steps to find him, the father, was you being fully dedicated to the well-being of this child, at least giving it a chance. You didn't know when you reached out how he was going to react. And so you clearly have that child's well-being first and foremost in your mind. Second of all, the father also has his well-being, that child's well-being, first and foremost in his mind, because he stepped right up. You guys are living in adjacent apartments. Like, there are people who are, you know, for all intents and purposes, biological mother and father, who get a divorce and still don't try to make that close, kind of easy and symbiotic, you know, relationship with each other to like live together. So in such close proximity. So you guys are in this. Your focus is exactly where it should be. And I commend you both for that, because that's awesome. That's what every child needs. And so I feel like if you took it this far, like, yes, you know, love is messy. It's, you know, it's great and it's crap at the same time. But like, if you have made it this far, if it were to go south, I feel like you two are the best people to attempt it, because at the end of the day, you know where your priority is. Your focus is on that child and that child's well-being. And I feel like you of all people would be able to pull yourselves out and then get it kind of flowing on new ground, but good, firm, healthy ground.
Yeah. And I would say too, like, to the other fear of like, what would happen if it ends badly and it ruins the co-parenting relationship we have, you know, not that this should be like a fun possibility, but, you know, it would be like any other couple that had a baby together and got divorced. Like, yep. People do it all the time. I hope that's not what happens for you. I hope you guys are together and happy and, you know, die in one another's arms like 80 years from now.
Aww.
But, you know, it would be the same as with any other couple. It's not that you're running any additional risk. You already have a child together. You are already in love. If you didn't go for it and he started seeing somebody else in 6 months, it would feel just as bad, I think, as if you had started seeing one another and then broke up and then he started seeing somebody else. And if you guys split up, it would be no different from any other co-parenting couple that was splitting up, and you would come up with a shared custody agreement. You would get divorced if you had gotten married. You would figure it out. You would get a mediator. And again, that's not, you can't prevent that. I think that fear is real, but you can't put it off by not taking this risk, right? Like, you've already taken most of the risk. You're just not letting yourself experience the reward yet. And so I think you should give yourself permission to give this a shot, because there's a really solid foundation here.
Yeah. And like, what's that? I know it's corny, but these quotes are, I just love them. They're so good. There's that quote that was surfaced, like going around on Instagram. I can't remember the context, but essentially, what if I fall? And the answer to that is, well, what if you fly? Right? What if, it could go
really
extremely
bad. Charming.
Could go freaking amazing.
Yeah.
You
have a lot of reasons to think it might. Like, you know this. You've seen this guy with an infant. Like, you have seen him in a pretty intense situation, and you fell in love with him as a result. So there's a lot of, not to say, like, you'll never have problems. Everything's perfect. Like, roll credits on your beautiful love story. But, like, you have a lot of reason to trust him and to think that the two of you are deeply compatible. Write us back in a year. Let us know how things are. You can take this slowly. You can keep talking to one another. You can both say, like, here's what I'm afraid of. Here's the worst case scenario. Can we both affirm that our primary commitment is always going to be to our kid and to treating each other with as much like respect and kindness as possible so that we're not both kind of secretly terrified? Oh, no. What if this goes badly? And then, we can't stand to be in the same room together. Like, talk it out. And that will, I think, help. All right. Luckily, we're going to end. We like started big and then kind of got subsequently sometimes a little less intense, but often more intense. And we're going to end on kind of like a nice softball, which I really appreciate. We're going to just quietly run out the clock today, I think.
Okay.
The subject is just reaching out or not. Dear Prudence, about 9 months ago, I briefly dated a woman I felt a real connection with. She was smart, interesting, fun, and I got a really good feeling from being with her. She was a widow, and I was coming off of a bad breakup at the time. And I mentioned that while her situation was tragic, hopefully she could feel comfort from knowing that her husband died loving her, and she could always carry that with her. I wasn't trying to imply that my situation was worse than hers, but I worry that it came off that way. We stopped seeing each other soon after, and I'm pretty sure that was the reason. All these months later, I still find myself thinking about her and wondering if it would be all right to reach out and see if she might be interested in giving things another try. I don't want to make her uncomfortable or upset, so I'm hoping you can help me make the best decision.
Aww.
I can definitely help you make the best decision, my man. I feel confident guessing that you are a man. Which is, if you don't want to make her uncomfortable or upset, don't reach out to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to take it from another angle? You made a pitying sound at the beginning. You might feel pity for him, in which case I'd be happy to fight about it.
Just because she was a widow, I mean, it's sad, it's like, oh, that sounds like just a sad situation just all around, but they did only briefly, date. There's no real longevity there. And she was a widow. So there could be any number of reasons why she is not available to this person. It doesn't necessarily have to be what they said. It could just be, she's going through a lot.
The only reason that I'm inclined to believe that is why is I don't know why else the letter writer would bring up the fact that he had been coming out of a bad breakup, right? Like, it's not as if he had said, like, I feel like he must have been talking about those two things. And it's the at least construction. That again, even if he didn't just say like, well, my breakup is worse because my person stopped loving me. But if there was a sort of, well, at least you know that he died in love with you, then yes, it does seem clear to me that he was at least implicitly suggesting that she was lucky in having been widowed. I think that's, I think he's probably right in intuiting that that's why they broke up. I could be wrong. It may be that she does not remember it that way, or it may be that it was not that clear a parallel that you were attempting to draw. But yeah, I think in general, anytime you attempt to make somebody feel better about the death of a loved one, you should just go for, I'm so sorry.
Yes.
Rather than, at least it wasn't something else. Because of course it wasn't something else. It was the thing that happened.
Yes. And to try to say that you know the feelings. I mean, she already knows them. She doesn't need anybody to either validate or you know, highlight any of those. You really never know the circumstances under which somebody passes. They could have had a tumultuous relationship right before. So to say, you know, he died loving you, it's like she's still in the back of her mind dealing with a lot. So it's best just to not even touch any of that, because relationships are so marred with various dynamics and situations and realities that you can't even begin to. And anytime you try to, you know, console somebody with your assumptions of what you think it was, they're just gonna be like, oh, you know, you don't get it. And it's true, you don't. And you're not supposed to. You don't have to. The best thing to do is just stay away from those conversations. And yeah.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, because it is so important sometimes to acknowledge, I don't know what to say. That's a good thing to say, I think. Like, if you say to someone, I really love you, it makes me really sad that you experienced this loss. I don't know what to say in the face of it. I'm at a loss for words. Anything that I can think of sounds like it would fall short. That is a great thing to say to somebody, to just acknowledge, like, I don't know what to say. Rather than trying to cover up that discomfort or anxiety by manufacturing something to say that is designed to reassure somebody else, but in fact makes them feel misunderstood, or like somebody else is trying to tell them, don't feel so bad about it. So I think in the future, if you don't know what to say when somebody is like, my husband just died, my wife just died, my mother just died, my child just died, it is really okay to say something like, I'm so sorry. I don't know what to say. I find myself at a loss for words. I just want you to know I love you and I'm thinking of you and I'm so sorry. And if you ever want to talk about it, I'm here. Like, stick with that rather than, well, at least it wasn't this other thing, or at least you have this particular comfort. Because I got to say, when you lose somebody you love, yeah, it can be comforting sometimes to think of how they loved you. And that can also be additionally painful of, they loved me and I wanted them to stay alive and keep loving me on life, like in life. So.
Or it could be the case that they hadn't quite, you know, figured that love out, and she's feeling some type of loss because she may have realized after that. There's all types of different, you know, emotions surrounding love, and it's such a messy thing. And I think it's so good to ask and to rather say that you are just, yeah, you don't know, but that you, you know, are there for that person, because then they can share that with you. They know that it's open and you're not going to make assumptions. And also sometimes, you know, when stuff is sticky in relationships are just messy, period, just in general, right? But when there are those situations surrounding loss, there can be a lot of regret for various things. The amount of stuff those two went through in a marriage, we have no clue about, because marriage is the ultimate, right? The ultimate connection with somebody, because you merge your lives. But, you know, if she was still working through some of that, and, you know, you come with your assumption, then she may feel like, well, now I can't open up to this person, because if he thinks that this love was anything but perfect, I'm going to sound maybe ungrateful, or our relationship's going to sound bad, or, you know, it's just, there's so much when you come up with your assumptions that then people shut down because they don't want to disappoint you, or they don't want to be judged by you, because obviously you already have one idea of it. Let me not tell you that I was cheating on him for 6 months before, or something. You know, you never know. I mean, you just have no clue of the plethora of relationship dynamics in a marriage. So the best thing is to stay neutral. And then that person feels like, yeah, I want to share with this person what it really was like, and what I'm missing, and what I'm grappling with, and what I feel lost from. And it's just, there's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll just say, you know, just when you say you're pretty sure that that was the reason, I think you're probably right. My guess is that you would not, mistakenly assume that that was why you stopped seeing each other, and that you included all those details for a reason. So I'll just say, if there's ever a time when you feel like you could offer her a genuine apology for that without attempting to say, and by the way, if you ever want to go out again, I promise not to say that again, that might be nice. She also might be like, fine. She might just be like, you know what, this guy's not for me. I don't want you to like reappear like a ghost from the past if you guys actually weren't together that long. But, you know, it might not be a bad idea to consider at some point just like a quick note of just like, hey, I'm really sorry. When we were seeing each other, I attempted to make you feel better about the loss of your husband by suggesting it wasn't that bad because he loved you. That was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. I apologize. If you can ever see your way to doing that, like, keep it light. Don't like beg her forgiveness. Don't give a lot of context as to why you did what you did. Then that might be a kind thing to do. But it's also probably fine to just let her continue on with her life. I don't think she probably needs that from you. It was not an especially like long or intense relationship. You just happen to really like her. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that she needs this from you. But no, do not ask her out again. If your goal is to not make her uncomfortable or upset, trust that she doesn't want to go out again.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, find somebody else to date. And in the future, when you're at a loss for words, just acknowledge it. That's okay. It's okay to be at a loss for words.
It's cute, really. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's attractive.
It's nice when someone acknowledges their vulnerability to you.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. Well, my friend, we did it. We answered a whole new batch of questions that I sprung on you as a complete surprise, and you were a real champ about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm super stoked about this day because it was so much fun. And I really enjoy the questions for today. I'm happy.
They were definitely more intense, I think.
They were. I was thrown for a loop. I was like, "Ooh, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this." But
came hot out the gate.
Yeah. But it's good. I feel like alive or something. I don't know. Hopefully we help the world.
I hope so, too. And hopefully we convinced at least one person not to move to Los Angeles.
Don't move to Los Angeles or the Bay anymore. Just,
stay where you are. Everyone just crawl under the nearest piece of furniture and stay there until everything is safe.
Yeah.
All right. Ange, thank you so much for stopping by the show. I really appreciate it. And thank you for telling me a little bit about my moon.
And your rising. I guessed your sign based on your rising. Your rising is what you project to the world. So I just want to say that that made me feel like a real guru.
Astrological guru. I will fully concede to you any and all expertise in the areas of anything about the stars. The only thing I know about the stars is that in seventh grade, we were supposed to do a star map. And I lied. And I looked up a picture of constellations online. And I drew that. And my teacher said, "What a great drawing of the stars. You must have really paid attention." And I felt bad about it for the rest of my life.
Yeah. See, that I should, if I would have known that story, then I would have known you were a Sagittarius, because that's a Sagittarius move. A Virgo would have worked on that project every day from the moment they received it until the night before to make it absolutely perfect, because they're so precise and they are such hard workers. Sagges.
Is that our nickname? We get a nickname?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good
we
gravy.
Do. Yeah. It's too much to say Sagittarius, right? So you just say Sag.
Man, oh man, what a time to be alive and learning things about stars and whatnot.
We can talk about it as long as you want.
We'll take it off the air for anyone whose interest and advice does not extend into an enthusiasm for astrology. I want to respect all comers here. But thank you so much for coming on the show and for being such a delight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Max Jacobs. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/Dear Prudence to subscribe. And remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR, that's 3327, and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute, tops. Looking for more from Slate? If Then is a podcast about technology, society, and power. Each week, Slate's April Glazer and Will Arimus take you on a lively tour of the tech news that actually matters, from fake news in your Facebook feed, to the algorithms that want your job, to the Uber drivers who want a job with benefits. New episodes are out every Wednesday. So check out If Then wherever you get your podcasts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.